the things that I see people doing, especially leaders that aren't as experienced, they say they're delegating, but then they want to dictate exactly how something is done. It's basically saying, I don't want to fool with this. I want you to fool with it. But I want you to fool with it my way. If you're telling them how to do everything, that's not their project. That's not their task. That's your task. You're just choosing not to do it.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Carrie Matthews. He is
managing
partner of Opal Partners Group. He earned a bachelor's of electrical engineering and a master of business administration from Auburn University, which is shocking how good he is at business. Ba-boom! He had the benefit of working for Fortune 100 companies early in his career because he's so damn smart, where he learned firsthand some of the tools and concepts he brings to small businesses now. After taking a chance on a startup company, he developed his passion for small businesses and has invested the rest of his career in leading and working with business owners as an executive, a fractional COO, and a strategy coach. Welcome to the show, Carrie.
Kenny, so glad to be here, and I need you to do my intro all the time. You're awesome.
Well, it is recorded now. Just feel free. We'll send you a clip and you can just play it into the microphone, set it down and begin your talks.
I'm going to play that every time I walk into a room.
I would. I like to play the People's Court theme. I have it on cassette as I walk in to a room. Actually, I'm ripping off a Boy Meets World scene, but it's still one of my favorites. He had it in a briefcase, and it was in one of those huge like tape recorders that had the speaker, and he had to hit the both buttons at the same time.
Yeah. Years ago, when I started a job, there was a lot of change that had to be made, and there were some personnel changes. And someone told me they wanted to play the Darth Vader march every time I walked into the room. And I was kind of proud of that. It's kind of sad to say, but...
Yeah. There's a lot of good that I think could come from that. Plus, it just gives you a beat to walk to.
Exactly.
It's like, everybody get in line. Well, tell me today, Carrie, what is on your mind?
There's a lot of things on my mind. When you talk to business leaders, business executives, they're all in different places. And I've had some recurring themes lately of accountability and delegation, loyalty, things like that. And that's just been tossed around in my mind a little bit as I do important things like mow the yard. And I think that those keep coming back to trust. I think most of the issues that I help companies work through, there is a trust factor at some level.
I would agree. I think anybody, I would say, so I may be about to insult some people, which is par for the course for me, but I think anybody with half a brain listens to that and goes, yeah, I agree. But it's one of those things that you may agree, but why then are we still struggling with accountability and delegation and performance and culture if it's so clearly obvious that this is a trust issue? So in your observation, as you've noticed this, what do you think the current thinking or prevailing wisdom is that keeps us from leaning into the truth you just dropped?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things, and hopefully nobody who I've had to work on this issue with is listening right at this moment and feeling offended. Sometimes it's a matter of our own insecurity.
Huh.
And we're not able to trust because we feel like we're playing the game, that we're not who we say we are, we're not as good as we think we are, and we're putting up the facade. I also think that we've just been conditioned. So much has happened in business over the past 5 years. You look at the pandemic and people working remotely, everybody, the great resignation. Then you look at return to work. Then you look at the rise of AI. And there's so much insecurity that people are scared to be vulnerable and put their trust out there and to lean into it because how do I protect myself?
Yeah, man, I think that's so good. I think a lot of people could draw from whether they're feeling secure or feeling insecure from the world around them. But I, and if I'm off base here, you can correct me, but full transparency to the listener, Carrie is a fellow System and Soul coach and friend of mine, so I didn't just meet him on the street. I'd be a little weird since he lives quite a ways away from me. But you and I use a tool or a book called The Only Leaders Worth Following from Tim Spiker. And in there, he talks about being inwardly sound. And one of those aspects in his research about being inwardly sound was being secure and settled, that I'm okay. Come what may, I'm still okay. So where does the security, insecurity, I might argue that really is an internal thing as opposed to the external circumstances dictating how I'm feeling about myself or my leadership. What's your take on that?
It's two sides of the same coin.
Okay.
I know a leader, spoke with him this week, and he always deferred taking action by saying, I'm not good at that piece. I need guidance here. And he constantly undermined himself because there was a level of self-awareness of what his skill set was and what mm-hmm. it wasn't. And mm-hmm. instead of leaning into and asking help on those areas where he was weaker, he just said, I'm not good at that. I can't do it. And he put it off. And I think that unintentionally created some doubt and a little bit of the starting to see the lack of trust in that individual's leadership.
Yeah, that it's one thing to, it's almost like his self-awareness stopped short. It sounds like that he acknowledged the shortcomings, the limitations of his abilities, but stopped short of saying, I'd love to learn. I'm willing to try, instead of just saying, yeah.
Well, it's not understanding the impact it's having on those, on the people that he's leading.
Is that just like how we build confidence in those we lead in our own leadership? Is that where you think that's coming from? Is that where it was detrimental to his leadership? Is that he diminished the confidence his team could feel in him?
I think he didn't like those aspects, the things he didn't do well. He didn't enjoy doing them. And a lot of it leaned in towards being very decisive. It also leaned into holding people accountable. Sometimes you have to make hard decisions as leaders. And he didn't enjoy, he's very relational, and that's very difficult for him to start making hard choices and holding people accountable. And that's where I think the trust comes in. You can't hold people accountable, and you can't be held accountable if there's a lack of trust, because you're always waiting for the shoe to fall. And I think he was there. Kenny, you may have read the book. It's been out for a long time now. Fierce Conversations by Susan Scott.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've gone through some of the material. I don't remember if I read the whole thing. I've done Crucial Conversations. There's all sorts of conversations.
There are. And just like we're having one here today. But Susan says that people are scared to have the conversation because it may damage the relationship. And I see that over and over again. And her point is that the conversation is the relationship. If you can't have the conversation, you don't have the relationship that you think you have.
Wow. The conversation is the relationship.
Yeah.
That's rewind, pause, snip, whatever you got to do on that tidbit. I mean, probably that's, we should just stop here. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Thanks, Susan.
Thanks, Susan. Tune in next week. I love that. That makes me think of from my communication degree where we studied a guy named Marshall McLuhan, where he would say the medium is the message.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hear that, the conversation is a relationship and we're afraid to have it. I can't remember where the research came from, but it's 7, maybe 8 seconds of a hard conversation where you feel really uncomfortable. And so really what we're not afraid of the conversation. We're afraid of those first 7 or 8 seconds.
Oh yeah. I can see that.
And it's the getting started. Once you're in the conversation, you're having it, you have your thoughts, what you've been meditating or processing on, and you can go into it, but it's the, how do I get this started? And so when I talk to leaders about it, I mentioned, I was like, are you going to let, and, you know, I do this in sort of a challenging way, but a good way, because usually the leaders you and I are talking with are people who like try to rise to the challenge and overcome and achieve. I was like, are you going to let 7 or 8 seconds completely like tank your department, your company, your leadership? Is it worth, how much is that worth to you? Do you want to lose like 3 A players because you won't have a hard conversation due to 8 seconds with a C player? And you start framing it like that, suddenly they're like, oh, well, I'm not afraid of 8 seconds. Now, they're not about to ride a bull. Like, was that 8 seconds? There's a movie callback for you. But do you think that's, is that really what people are afraid of? Is that the damaging the relationship? Or if I bring this up, I guess, what is damaging the relationship in your experience, at least in their mind? Like, is it, oh, well, now I'm a jerk? Or like you said, the waiting for the other shoe to drop, like I'm on pins and needles that I may lose my job because my boss is going to come and have a hard conversation with me. Or do you think the bosses, the leaders, actually don't have a proper frame? They think, I've either got to be super nice guy or I've got to be an a-hole. And it's a false dichotomy.
It is both. It is both. Because if, as an employee, if your manager comes to talk to you and he gives some hard truth, more than likely it's something you recognized anyway, and you just don't want to admit. My coach used to ask me the question, what are you pretending not to know? And that could be either be about myself, my own leadership, or it could be about something I was ignoring in the business. But I think the flip side of that is 100% true. If I, as your manager, start holding you accountable, having difficult conversations, what if he quits? What if he leaves? What if he shuts down? And now I've got to go replace him. Now there's a burden back on me. So you get this two-way lack of trust. Because we're not sure of the stability of the relationship, we don't have that difficult conversation, and we're not reaching our performance. I mean, if you're not telling somebody what they can do to improve, you're not setting them up for success.
Right. And I would argue not really being the leader you're supposed to be or that they need. You brought up something really interesting that I hadn't thought of before. We usually, when we talk about trust in the workplace, it's usually do the direct reports trust the supervisor, the manager, the leader? But the way you just said it is, it sounds like it's bi-directional. I think anything that's a relationship, I think, is a both and. Like it takes two to tango. Some may even say it takes two to make a thing go right. It also takes two to make it out of sight. Sorry, I had to resolve that loop in my head. Thank you, Jock Jams. Dude, I'm just living in the 90s right now.
When you get to the 80s, let me know.
The 8 seconds, we got that. Well, I'll make my way there. We're halfway there. We're just living on a prayer. Is that good enough for you?
Yes.
Bon Jovi. But we don't often think about the supervisor lacking trust in how the direct report will receive and process it. We may talk about managers don't trust people to go do the right thing and looking down on them as a performance thing, but to take, even if they were to come across the right way, there seems like there could also be a lack of trust in them receiving the feedback or the correction in the proper way. What's your take on that?
Sure. I mean, when you correct, or not even correct, you just point out something. When you have that hard conversation, if you're not secure in who that employee is and your relationship, they could shut down. You may be scared that they're going to give you the cold shoulder or they're going to leave. And I think that really prevents us from having those tough conversations. But that's just one aspect of it, Kenny. You pointed out some other things too. People are scared maybe to even delegate because they don't know how the employee's going to do it, or they're scared of the response, or they're going to maybe they're afraid that the employee's going to do it better than they would have done it.
Hey, now.
You know? And there's a lot of truth there. People talk about trust being earned. Trust is also given, and I think it takes both. I mean, I think about the first time you give your 16-year-old the keys to the car when they get their driver's license. They've never driven a car on their own by themselves before with you not being in the seat. And here you go, putting them in control of a powerful 4,000-pound machine, and you're trusting them to do it. And they come back the first time. You start slowly building that trust, but you had to first give the trust. They hadn't earned it yet, but you had given it.
It's like seed trust.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And I don't know which comes first, chicken or egg. Do you earn it or do you give it? I don't know the answer to that.
I actually, over the last few years, I've thought differently about the trust is earned sort of thing. Is I could do everything right and you could still not trust me. And so I really do think it's a case of trust being given. There probably is a little bit at the beginning. We have to have some basis, like to get started, somebody's got to go first, which I say typically should probably be the leader to get it started. But then as we prove things, then we're able to get, you may feel more or less comfortable giving it, but I'm not convinced anymore that it's just earned, because I've seen leaders who do very well, but you have a teammate or a team member who may have come from a really toxic work environment and they just aren't healed from it. It's a little like, you know, in dating, like you have a really bad breakup. And suddenly you're treating the new partner you're dating as if they're that other person with all the same conditions, even though they're totally different. And that person may have done nothing wrong and are just the most perfect individual who ever walked the face of the planet. But if you still don't trust them because of what happened before, right? So that's where I think the givenness takes place. I wanted to ask you, you've mentioned accountability a couple times, which is something you and I, we talk a lot about with our clients and our different, our coaching peer groups. And I think everybody has a little bit of a different take on what it means. And some people view it as a dirty word, or some coaches try to go around it because they feel like, oh, that's, you know, can't hold people accountable. I've actually had somebody say that to me. What's your take on accountability? Like, how are you defining it? And how do you talk about it with the leaders that you coach?
I think we put too much fear and consternation around that word. It's a scary word for people. In my mind, as an employee, it was always, am I doing what I said I was going to do? Yeah. From an employee standpoint, it's real simple. And from a manager standpoint, I'm just asking you, show me that you've done what you said you're going to do.
Right.
It only becomes an issue when people aren't doing what you expect them to do. And then you have to kind of figure out why. It's because they're not capable. Is there something going on that prevents them from doing so, whether personal or professional? Were you not clear on what you expected of them? So it's not that people don't like holding people accountable. It's like they don't really know how. And they don't know, why is this such a big deal for me? Does it make me feel like the bad person? Does it make me feel like I'm the micromanager? And you think about Ronald Reagan, he said, trust but verify. He didn't say trust but micromanage. So I want to, and that's really what we're talking about, is have you done what we agreed to? Are you taking care of what we need to do? And if not, why not? Lennon, let's get to the issue that's preventing us from doing what we said.
Gotcha. I think you brought up a lot of good points with that. And one of the things that I found helpful to myself, but also in explaining it, because as coaches, we're put in a place of trying to articulate something that maybe they're already familiar with, but articulated in a new way that allows them to engage with a concept, an aspect of leadership. Maybe they just have a wrong frame for it. I have adopted Dr. Timothy Clark, who wrote The Four Stages of Psychological Safety. He defines accountability as the transfer of ownership and critical thinking. And in doing so, says, you know, there's basically three areas of accountability, which are tasks, processes, and outcomes. So when we're talking about accountability and we have those three levels of task, process, and outcome, I recently had a CEO tell me that in hearing that, it really flipped how she was thinking about it, because she's been delegating outcome. Now, they've used some of the system and soul tools of, you know, building their org chart where every function has a mission, responsibilities, KPIs. And I correlated those to outcome, process, and tasks. And I said, I think a lot of people are trying to delegate the outcome and just throw that out. And that's probably the most nerve wracking part, instead of let's delegate tasks and see how they do with that. And then we've been talking about trust is earned. Then we give them a process or a core responsibility, and then we give them an outcome. What's been your experience on sort of like, because there is a bit of a process. You can't just say, well, you got to trust me and give me everything all at once. But you also can't do things, I think, in certain order may set you and them up for failure. I'm curious of your take on that.
I've never thought about it in terms of task, process, and outcome. I really like that. I'm going to blatantly steal that from you and probably not give you credit when I talk to my clients. They don't know you anyway, so it won't matter.
All right.
But one of the things that I see people doing, especially leaders that aren't as experienced, they say they're delegating, but then they want to dictate exactly how something is done. It's basically saying, I don't want to fool with this. I want you to fool with it, but I want you to fool with it my way. And what I've been telling him and other people like that is that if you are making all the decisions, you own the outcome. If you're telling them how to do everything, that's not their project. That's not their task. That's your task. You're just choosing not to do it. You own the outcome at that point.
That's powerful. It's a little like, I don't know where, feel like this was said in our group at one point, but I've stolen it and ripped it off. R&D, rip off and duplicate, is your systems are perfectly designed to give you the results you've been getting.
Yes.
And that sounds a little bit like your leadership is perfectly designed to give you the results you've been getting from your people.
Exactly. I mean, you think about it. Why did we go to all the trouble of hiring these really smart people and then telling them what to do? I think it was Steve Jobs. And listen, Steve Jobs was both brilliant and apparently awful to work for because he was so driven. But I believe it was him that said, why would you hire these great people and then tell them what to do? They need to be telling us what to do. Mm-hmm. If they're really gifted and strong in these areas, let them excel and do their thing. If you're scared to delegate and hold people accountable, what you're doing is setting yourself up as the bottleneck, and your company will never go beyond what you are able to achieve. And if you really want to unleash the power of the business, you've got to let people do what they can do really well.
That'll preach. I wholeheartedly agree. And I quote that, or I use that Steve Jobs quote quite a bit. We don't hire smart people and tell them what to do. We hire them so they can tell us what to do.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess it's on brand for me to make a joke out of everything. But I tell people, it's like, if you hired a bunch of people and you have to either because you choose to, or they just won't take the reins and actually step into it. Because there is a two part, again, takes two to make a thing go right. They have to step into it because they could keep throwing stuff over the fence back to you. Like that one leader you were mentioning, is like, I don't really know. I need guidance. I need this. Like, it's how Benj Miller said this once, is be careful or watch out for disagreement masquerading as confusion. Or like, I just don't know how to do it. But really they disagree. They just don't want to do it. And so they put it off on, I don't know how, nobody trained me sort of BS.
Yep.
But I tell people jokingly, I was like, if you have to tell somebody what to do and you have to hold their hand, you haven't hired an adult, you've hired a child, and there are usually laws against you doing that. So they're like, oh, haha. But then they really think, I was like, yeah, but somebody came to mind that either you keep going and grabbing their hand to walk them through everything, or someone keeps coming up, like my 3.5-year-old, we're in a parking lot. He comes up, he grabs my hand so we can walk safely through it. But I didn't hire 3.5-year-olds. I might have hired a 35-year-old, and we probably have to call HR if he keeps coming up and holding my hand. So what do we, how do we navigate the both and of, I've got to trust but verify. I love that. But we also need to help these people take hold of it. Because there are some times when the employee's like, oh my gosh, I wish you would stop micromanaging me and just let me do my job. But there's other times where it seems they're a little bit like a car in neutral. and they're not quite going, they're not fully stopped, they might be rolling slowly. How do we navigate between those two situations that sort of have the same outcome, which ends up the leader's doing everything and accountable for the outcome?
Yeah, so when the leader's doing everything, I call that the art of delegating up. The employee has mastered it. They are delegating their responsibilities up to their manager. Basically, they're abdicating what they're supposed to be doing. And it, again, it can play as I need guidance, I need help, whatever that is. And you said something a moment ago that I think really plays into this specific situation is you have to start trusting with the small things, the tasks. And I'll go back to Susan Scott in Fierce Conversations. She talks about the decision tree.
Okay.
And a leaf decision, if you lose a leaf of a tree, it is no big deal. A leaf decision is something you tell the employee, make this decision, act on it. Don't even report back to me. Just do it. Handle it. If you need to give somebody a $25 credit, give the $25 credit. It's immaterial. You saved a client, whatever. Then there are branch decisions. Make the decision and then report back to me. Let me know what you did. Until you start getting to a trunk decision or a root decision, that's where you start coming to me beforehand. So I think you set some guidelines about what kind of authority that people have so they can start making some small decisions so you can trust them in the bigger decisions. So that's one way. And that's from a decision-making standpoint, but I think it plays into the task that you were talking about. Give them a small task. Give them something that maybe is not perfectly within their job description, something they've never done before, but something you don't want to do and you need to delegate. Let them start stretching their wings a little bit, building some muscle on some small tasks, and let them build up to it. And you don't want to hand over a multi-million-dollar project to somebody who's never managed one before. Right. You want to build them up and give them some coaching guidance along the way. So I think the key to it is you got to start somewhere.
Yeah. Stop debating it or stop hemming and hawing about do we keep them, do we fire them? Like, you need to do something.
Yeah.
And in most cases, I've found that leaders, generally, they know what they need to do. Sometimes they just need permission.
Yeah.
Or they think they do. They think they need permission to do it from somebody else to tell them that, hey, that isn't the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Yeah. And sometimes it's good to have those people around, though, tell you like, hey, I am now dumber for having heard your ideas. I award you no points and may God have mercy on your soul. How about that? That's another 90s one, I think. That was Adam Sandler. But I think this is a great conversation that continues on and on. One thing before we land the plane, you mentioned abdication, which one, I'd love to hear you define. I have talked about delegation versus abdication in leadership, and I'd be curious about your take on that because I do think it plays into this issue of accountability that we've been talking about.
Well, I think the distinction is pretty clear. Delegation is intentional. Abdication is unintentional. Abdication is deciding I'm just not going to do something, or I'm going to pretend that doesn't need to be done. And I am willfully choosing not to do a task or whatever because I don't want to, I don't like to, or whatever. Delegation is something that needs to be done, and it's intentionally giving it to somebody else. And you recently, in one of your newsletters, I love this idea. I've used it since I saw it. Take a list of things you do. Every report, every meeting, every task, does it energize you or drain you? The things that drain you, delegate those things. Now, some things only you can do and you can't enjoy every aspect of your work. But if it's something that you can, delegate it. And what that does is it starts building confidence and new skills in those people. There is that book, The Speed of Trust. And if you can't delegate things and grow people so that everybody can do more things, more important, big things, you're slowing down the organization's ability to grow, get bigger and improve, and the employee's ability to add more value.
100%. By the way, if anybody's wondering what Carrie's talking about, every Tuesday I send out a quick email, can be read in 60 seconds or less, called Scale Weekly. We'll link it up at kennylang.com/scale-weekly. You can sign up. It's real simple. But yeah, that's one of the things I love doing is where am I getting the energy? Where am I not? Because in a lot of cases as leaders, we have to sort of decipher that for ourselves or go out and get a coach or a consultant or something like that. Mm. If I'm further down in the org chart, usually I can have somebody who can help me along with those sort of things. And it's a little harder when you're at the top because no one's giving you like, here's the blueprint of exactly everything right. I would think most leaders value speed, especially the visionary types that we may be dealing with that are CEOs, executive directors, founders, those sorts. Nobody likes to go slow. I say famously, it's not unusual for people to hear me say I'm going mock Jesus with my hair on fire. That's just the speed I'm comfortable with. I'm actually a lot more uncomfortable at a walking pace.
That's funny. You're talking to a COO, and I always felt like my job was, can we do this? Can we replicate it? Are we moving too fast for the organization to absorb? So I look at the visionary and the operator or the CEO and COO, and that's the gas and the brake. And it takes both to drive a car, Kenny.
It does. And so that's why if I'm starting another company, I might need to come holler at you just so that I could go the appropriate speed and not flip my car, aka the business. Kerry, I think this is a great conversation. I think there's several more that should spawn out of this, but those will be for return episodes.
Yeah.
There you go. Like Return of the Jedi. And we're going to play Darth Vader, the Imperial March.
It's fantastic. It all comes together, Kenny.
It does. Just
like a Seinfeld episode.
Worlds are colliding, Jerry. So that's my best Jason Alexander, and I'm now embarrassed. So if people want to know more about you, more about Opal Partners Group and what you're doing and how you're helping folks, where would you send them? Where do they go?
Sure. They can always go to my website, opalpg.com. That's OPALPG.com. A lot of information there. You can also find me, Kerry Matthews, on LinkedIn. You can find Opal Partner Groups on LinkedIn. All funnels lead back to my inbox, so feel free to hit me up.
Awesome. And we'll link all that up in the show notes. So if anybody wants to connect with Kerry, he really is. He's a world-class leader, coach, and just an all-around great human being. So I highly recommend you reach out to him. So thank you again for dropping some nuggets of wisdom on us, Kerry. And thank you to the listeners. We wouldn't be here. Well, I guess we would be here and we would just be talking on a video chat that none of my family listens to, which is interesting. I think they hear me talk enough, but thank you so much. This show, all these episodes are all for you, the listener. I only want to help you and add value to you and help you take your next step in your leadership. And if you have gotten value from any of these episodes or all of them for the super listener, then please rate, review, subscribe, whatever the action is on your platform of choice, if it's Spotify, Apple, or YouTube, and those are kind of our big three. Please let me know what you're looking for, what's been helpful, what's been unhelpful. That's fine too. I can take it because this is designed for you. And as you engage with the content, more people find this through the algorithm. It suggests it. And it's a free and easy way for you to help a fellow leader on their journey and take their next step. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.